You are about to enter the pop, pulp, and subcultural minds of several individuals. What may leak into the ether can sometimes be too strange, too confusing for the average human mind. When nerds assemble.
Hello, and welcome to episode 56 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
And today we are in...
We are joined with Richard Stamp.
Yeah, who we've had problems trying to get on before, and it was almost like we've had some gremlins kind of crawling around. But anyway, if you don't remember, Richard is actually the guy who's trying to start a new gaming bar in Falmouth, Cornwall, called 8-Bit Gaming Bar, and he's with us right now.
I am indeed. At least I managed to make it this time.
Which is brilliant. And I'm hoping technology doesn't try to scupper us again.
Yeah, well, it was Google Hangouts that stopped us last time.
So. Yeah, but Skype's already been playing up tonight, so let's get on with this podcast, man, and actually give people stuff before it goes horribly wrong.
Let's get on with it, then.
Okay, I think I'm the only person who's watched this, but a trailer for The Death of Superman Lives, What Happened, has finally been released. Am I the person who knows about this?
I watched the trailer. It was a little bit weird.
Yeah, I think it's because it's a Kickstarter documentary that isn't, is it Indie Game the Movie? Is it Indie Game the Movie, Indie Game Story? I can never remember.
Oh.
Indie Game the Movie, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, this is a Kickstarter-funded documentary. It's already been funded, which is being directed, produced, and whatnot by John Schnepp. He's an animator and sort of writer, producer, and director. But he's worked on Metapocalypse and Space Ghost Coast to Coast.
Metapocalypse, isn't that the cartoon?
It's not a cartoon, it's a way of life.
But basically, who remembers that, I suppose the only way I ever learned about it firsthand was when, in the first stand-up DVD that Kevin Smith did, Evening with Kevin Smith, he talks about that Superman script that he worked on, sort of like the late sort of 90s, early 2000s, which never materialized into anything but had Tim Burton attached to it. And then later transpired that Nicolas Cage was potentially being cast as Superman in this film. And they actually made up a whole kind of like muscle molded kind of Superman costume for him and everything. And there are actually pictures of
him. Yeah, I saw some of those.
Yeah. Well, this is a documentary about all of that, about the Superman film. But actually, a lot of stuff happened for it in the pre-production stages, and nothing ever happened. This ill-fated film. I think that the only person I wish they had managed to get an interview with, but it doesn't look like they will have managed to have snagged one, is Tim Burton. But Nicolas Cage has got he's got a bit of interview in there, and Kevin Smith does, and a whole bunch of other people who were attached to the project around the time that it was kind of circling the otherwise sort of fiery environment known as development hell.
I mean, I have to say this, because the story itself is quite a nice anecdote when, you know, kind of Kevin Smith talks about it and whatnot, but making a documentary about a film that didn't exist in the end.
To be fair, it's a short list of everything that you shouldn't do in a film. You know, get Tim Burton involved, Nicolas Cage in a starring role, you know, it's kind of all the things that you shouldn't be doing, and I can thoroughly understand why they would put a documentary out about that.
So it's like a checklist.
It is.
There's also get J.J. Abrams involved if it's got Star Trek anywhere in it.
I'm sorry, I feel offended by this Nicolas Cage derided here. I think it's fine so long as the film involves him having his face taken off. Or he's on a plane filled with convicts.
Is this a film or a documentary? Just check.
It's
midnight reading for you.
Or he has to drive cars really angrily. I'm sorry, I'm just highlighting some of my favourite Nicolas Cage films. Yeah. And then it's at this point that I confess that I actually liked the Ghost Rider films, but you could tell in the second one that they'd had to tone things down in order to get a lower rating.
I mean, the thing about Nicolas Cage is that when he stars in a movie, that it's not necessarily a good movie, but it's an enjoyable watch to a certain extent.
I like how he plays crazy.
Yeah, his kind of crazy is like... You know,
he plays the crazy.
He plays the crazy. So
like in Face Off, and he's just like... you know, the faces that he pulls, and it's like, ugh.
But anyway, there's someone's actually, you know, released a trailer for this documentary they're making that people have paid already to be made. The general public has already voted with their wallets.
I know, that's kind of...
My favourite thing about Nicolas Cage is the admission. I'm not quite sure where it was, but he actually admitted that he is addicted to money and will never turn down a role, which is why he is one of the most prolific actors that you will find, with a huge collection of all right films, a small collection of really good films, and a massive collection of, Jesus Christ, what the hell is Nicolas Cage doing?
Oh God, why?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of anything though of his that I've watched that I felt was as bad as Catwoman, and I'm failing at the moment.
I'll just say I'm a fan of Warlock, the original Warlock, if anyone remembers that.
I mean, to be honest, the same could actually be described about like virtually anyone from Hollywood. Mm. They have their, you know, really good, well, there's some that have their really good films, there's some that have mediocre films, and the rest is, you know, rubbish. So it's kind of a general.
I like the angle that he says he's addicted to money, because was it Christopher Walken said he was addicted to work?
Mm.
And that's why he doesn't turn things down. He hates being just, you know, sitting around at home. So he's got some interesting films to his credit.
Meanwhile, I can't help but remembering a piece of advice that he gave to a BBC Breakfast presenter earlier this year, where he said that young actors and actresses shouldn't actually live in LA at the beginning of their career because the environment is essentially toxic. He said you just should not live in Hollywood or LA at all.
I can kind of imagine that, actually.
Yeah. But anyway, I'm going to move us on to our next bit of intriguing news. It's because there's not too much we could say about it.
No,
meanwhile, let's talk about a piece of news to do with one of the biggest game releases of the year, because, you know, that's a thing we should probably do. While I may not be buying Grand Theft Auto 5 on launch, I could not help but laugh at the comments in relation to the revelation that Rockstar have been using the voices of real gangsters and crooks to voice some of the cast in GTA 5.
It's a little interesting, isn't it? And I've got mixed feelings with that.
Yeah. As far as I could tell, they hopefully didn't necessarily sort of like pull anyone who was currently awaiting trial. But there did seem to be a lot of people that have perhaps recently been sort of like put out on parole.
Yes, one person within about 24 hours or something. I just got out of prison.
I think it's wonderful. I think they're reaching out to these violent criminals that are obviously having a hard time finding employment in a niche industry, which is really going to appreciate their particular expertise in a legal manner.
It's not the first time that an entertainment production has reached out to the criminal classes in order to attain a degree of authenticity about
The thing which occurs to me here is The Wire.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if anyone's heard of it or seen it. It's a, you know, tiny little thing, not very popular. But several of the cast members who weren't the, you know, the big name ones, but well, I suppose, you know, a few of the big name ones as well, were also pretty much just plucked from, you know, those neighborhoods where they were filming.
So yeah, authenticity and crime.
It's a double-edged sword. It's just, you know, you shouldn't just, you know, keep inviting, you know, the Cray twins onto talk shows, you know, that kind of thing, you know, like they used to. But if you're actually going to try and, you know, get people involved in, you know, a bit of voice acting and, you know, things like that, and say, look, you can actually do something else.
I'm just kind of waiting for the outtakes where, you know, one of the gang members just turns around and says, Nicky that? What kind of name is that?
Actually, because this is based off an interview that somebody did for a radio show over in Chicago recently. Like, they were talking to one of the production people for the game, and he said that the gangsters that they did bring on, the criminals, whatever, or reform people from these various groups and that, they would say when they've been given the lines, I wouldn't say that.
Yeah, nobody would say that.
And then obviously, you know, change it to something that actually sounds authentic, which is quite good.
Oh, bother, they've shot Jeremy.
I wouldn't say that. But then there was the other issue that somebody pointed out in some of the more reasonable comments was like, well, they seem to have... They went and got like a load of voices from sort of criminals in the Alabama area. And the game's obviously set, you know, in a version of Los Angeles. So, two sort of different Alabama. Sides of the country there.
Not just that, but I mean, I would have thought completely different kind of life, but not necessarily lifestyles, but, you know, environments.
Yeah, different ways of doing crime. different ways of having an accent, one might argue, you know.
LA has more cameras.
And also, it does depend where exactly that, you know, those particular gangs are supposed to be. I presume that makes sense, because I cannot imagine them being stupid.
No.
I mean, they can be stupid over things. I mean, let's be clear. But I can't see them, you know, being stupid over casting.
Unless, you know, there's not enough gangs in this version of LA that they have to import them from Alabama or something.
Perhaps, but...
I'm just hearing dueling banjos now.
Wouldn't it be easy to just import gang members from, like, Nevada or something? Because Las Vegas is, like, close. I mean, I know, like, obviously the mafia meant to be out of Vegas these days, so to speak. I bet they're still kicking out a bit, you know?
I can't imagine them being anywhere near, you know, where there's gambling and booze and, you know, anything like that. No, I just can't see it.
No. Just one other slight offshoot for this a minute. It was announced after we put the podcast out last week that the Xbox One is set for a 22nd of November release in the UK and US.
Yeah.
So, I don't think we can talk anymore about the Xbox One for that. So I'm going to take us back to
Can I just say that the only thing that actually impresses me about the Xbox One is that you can connect 8 controllers up to it.
That's all that's got you excited?
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Okay.
But
I'm quite excited that they managed to overclock it by 9-point-something%.
Wow.
It's gone from 1.6 to about 1.75 gigahertz per core, which means it's like 8 slightly overclocked bad laptops rather than 8 bad laptops.
Going back to Grand Theft Auto 5 for the minute, I think, what's his name? Is it Dan Houser?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, as said in another interview, this time with The Guardian, that there's the reason they can't have female protagonists still at this stage in the franchise is because it's all about masculinity. And it's just like, what, because obviously women are all feminine and all men are masculine. Wait a minute, didn't you guys do that gay Tony thing the last time round?
So, yeah, but they don't want to make all the guns pink and with flowers and bunnies on the side.
Can I just say, the recent film Dread, that had a female villain, and
it was
that
awesome.
Worked spectacularly well.
And well,
and another Brit.
Yeah, and well popular.
But is she?
Yeah, I think
Lena Headley.
Yeah, but I was going to say, whilst popular culture seems to like ignoring the fact that female criminals are genuinely a thing and have been for centuries, they are really a thing and do exist today. They're not fictional. There are women who aren't just things for hanging off of men's arms at the dubious-looking golf club and social functions. They are genuinely, you know, actually in charge of gangs.
I also think that I'd actually make it much more interesting because, you know, going from a female perspective, it would be, you know, kind of conflict and whatnot.
So, female perspective, it's the fact that there may not even be a female perspective. There's just the normal kind of perspective of living in that world where crime is normal.
Mm.
I still find it really, really annoying that we live in a world where it's 2013 and it's a little bit controversial if a game chooses to have a black main character.
Yeah.
Like all the fuss about the original, you know, GTA San Andreas having a black lead. And, oh, no, people won't be able to relate. It's like, yeah, I've never seen a film with a black character in because, you know, I'd, I just can't understand what they're saying, and I don't understand their motivations.
You must have had such a hard time with Bad Boys films. Such a hard time, man.
Well, you know, I said I mentioned The Wire.
Yeah.
That was really confusing.
I
can kind of understand. I mean, if they're throwing, you know, from the perspective of they're throwing, by all accounts, something like $250 million at this game, it's reputedly around about the, you know, $250+ million. You might want to be careful that, you know, you want to have as, you know, as big a net as possible for the initial thing. But I would be happier with it if they said, yes, we're going to be doing a big DLC like we did with, you know, the original GTA 4. Mm. And we're going to have female protagonist in that.
Yeah.
And it's going to be, you know, similar to the, you know, Lost and Damned, where you play a female hoodlum. And, you know, sort of weaves in with, you know, all the other stories. So I can kind of understand from a money perspective, I still think it's stupid.
Yeah, I mean, you've got three main characters to play as in this one as well, so...
I think also assuming that those three main male characters, I mean, if they were individuals in real life, would all be happy with being trapped within the man box.
Yeah.
You know, because the whole world, oh, it's representations of masculinity, and it's like, yeah, but you get guys who... do act masculine, but who necessarily don't necessarily want to be masculine, and at the same time aren't necessarily gay. So, you know, it's kind of like roles and representation. Yeah. That there are issues.
So this is a nerd podcast, so we kind of get it.
Yeah, I'm gonna take us on to an extremely unrelated. I can't do a link to this. I can't think of how I do a link to this bit of news. Stargate reboot is yet again on the cards.
Mm.
Emmerich's been talking to MGM about the film rights. He's been talking, he's been nattering, he's been talking, he's been nattering. He's been saying that, you know, could get, you know, three films out of it. Doing a reboot. Three films.
No, don't do a reboot.
You see, that makes me suspicious because presumably they're kind of at the point where they're actually... not even kind of penning, you know, the storyline yet, and they're already saying, "Oh, we could have three films out of this." No, no, have three films if you need it to, you know, do the story. Don't plan for three films and then just, you know, try and get content for it.
Just because three films seems to be the thing at the minute, especially if you've got a small book like The Hobbit.
Mm. Incredibly small, but it's funny how that. Kind of happen. No, well, it's not just that they've got The Hobbit, they've got like what a bunch of the sort of side tales that were sort of eventually published and all that, that they've just kind of bunged in there. Just kind of go, heave this in, crowbar.
I'm still hammers. Completely baffled about Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah.
I'm baffled. I like Johnny Depp, but.
And there's another really... one. And there's another one coming as well.
Yeah.
But I really liked the original Stargate. It was
I liked the original Stargate, and I liked a lot of what happened with the series as well. It had its issues, but I liked the fact that they, you know, they added to the mythos. If this is the kind of thing that I've heard before with, you know, them wanting to do films, it's just going to completely jettison the, you know, the series.
I had admit that, you know, I'm familiar with the earlier seasons of SG-1, but I have no idea how Michael, was it, thingy-bajiggy, the one that plays Crichton. Michael Crichton in, not Michael Crichton. His name, and Claudia Black ended up in the series, and I was like, what? I appreciate the fact that they're, you know, still on TV because they're, you know, they're awesome people and they do awesome characters, but by the same token, what the hell is going on?
he was an Air Force test pilot who ended up rumbling some of SG-1 or, you know, something like that, and I think she was the host of a Gauld.
Okay. As you do.
And sort of she runs into her former, you know, symbiote later on. So it kind of works, and it was nice as it was almost a kind of a reboot of the series, you know, with continuity and everything, but, you know, with a different set of, you know, most of the characters. And yeah, it was all right, but they seriously screwed up with their, you know, their big baddie. I think, and he just sort of, you know, meandered across because they lost the system lords as bad guys.
Okay.
But yeah, I can understand why when it's something like 9 or 10 seasons.
Yeah.
You can kind of lose track.
Star Trek was 7 seasons per one. And I appreciate it when, you know, series don't kind of aim for like 7 and then that's it, that's over, you know, done and dusted. And, you know, I like it when they kind of go over, but to a certain extent, you've kind of got to question how far is too far.
Mm. When you have a completely new story arc.
Absolutely. I mean, I think Smallville was probably 1 or 2 seasons over what it really should have been.
House was perhaps a little too long as well. A little too long, maybe 1 or 2.
I don't know. I think they kind of kept it fresh mostly until the end.
Mm.
But, yeah.
But the thing about having a Stargate reboot, though, is that it's not necessarily a really iconic sci-fi film. It's kind of weird. Like, despite the high production values, obviously went into it during the 90s, it's not a 90s sci-fi film. That if you ask somebody to think of a 90s sci-fi film, they probably aren't going to say Stargate, I would say.
Mm.
I think you're more likely to get somebody saying something like Fifth Element or Phantom Menace, even.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
Or Back to the Future 3 or Terminator 2.
I have to admit, I think there is a severe lack of actual sci-fi TV shows that kind of set in space on TV.
Yes. At
the moment. There's a severe lack of
them.
We've
had this discussion before.
Yes, and even though we're getting more sci-fi films in Hollywood, you know, with stuff like Elysium and whatnot, I think we really could do with, you know, another, well, not necessarily space opera, but, you know, kind of space-based sci-fi series.
That isn't Star Trek.
On TV.
Firefly.
I could deal with another Star Trek series if they did it right.
They'd have to fire several of the people who were involved in the last few series. And that's coming from a Star Trek fan.
Problem is you're running on nostalgia, and nostalgia never tastes as good when you have it for lunch as well as breakfast.
That's true, but I mean, even a completely new series, you know, I'm kind of eager for anything.
But you will invariably run it back to the things that you thought were good, and if it's not similar in the ways that make you happy, it's not going to work, and therefore, moving forward is essentially a false economy. It's not going to work. You're gonna bring a new sci-fi series and you're gonna say, oh, this reminds me of this. It'll bring the nostalgia up. You just need to find something that does it just enough. And I think it's never gonna be an easy thing.
I don't think nostalgia comes into it for sci-fi. Anything that comes along, which just has, you know, it's coherent. It can do something completely different, just so long as it actually makes sense. And I'm reasonably happy with that. It doesn't have to, have interplay. You know, it doesn't have to have a sort of Spock McCoy kind of interplay, or you know, it doesn't have to have mankind has created its own undoing with Cylons, you know, kind of, you know, storyline. Just so long as it makes sense and it looks like it could go places, no pun intended, when you're talking about spaceship sci-fi.
I didn't mean you guys personally, but I think for a large part of the prospective audience, I think there's going to be a lot of that.
Hmm.
I'm just trying to think again, going back to Stargate, how they would have to, if they took the basic storyline of the first film, imagine stretching that out over 3 films. That would be painful. But then it'd be a case of, well, then if they weren't going to do that, it'd be a case of, obviously, discovery of the Stargate. We piss somebody off. A second film would be Invasion Earth, probably. Third film would be Bring the Pain to Them.
So it's basically a three-act structure that you'd expect from a single film. Stretched out. See, that wouldn't work because even in like TV series where you had like a double episode, you could always tell when you've got a double episode because the first act would be so long.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
There are trilogies that have tried to do that. I'm trying to think which... But it's happened. It's like the first one was everything. The middle one was like... And then the last one was like... Meh. And you think if they'd have just made one huge film, that would have been great.
Even if it was 6 hours.
or to keep banging the same damn drum, just take the money that you spend on a big budget film and throw it at a TV series and spread it out over about, you know, 10 or 13 episodes if you want to do a story arc.
Yeah,
that's very true.
Just for God's sake, do it properly. Just I'm kind of sick of films where nothing much seems to happen and yet they last, you know, just for about 2 hours or so.
Mm.
And it's, well, there was this happened, that happened, and the other happened. There could have been far more, but obviously they didn't have time.
I think a couple of times I've kind of come out of the cinema and been like, well, I've just watched a film. I can't really pick out any specific elements from it because it just seemed almost like this grey mass. But I know I've seen a film.
Yeah.
What did you fill that with? This I've heard.
I know the couple of films recently, but I can't remember them. That's how grey they were.
Do you know the last film I saw recently, which was surprisingly fantastic?
What's that?
Pacific Rim.
Blew me away. I want to see that because of Del Toro. And
oh god, it just completely blew me away. I was expecting boy meets girl, tragic past. They totally fall in love. And then through the power of shared mindship and love, they conquer the world. But what actually happened was an amazing film where giant robots stomped things, got stomped, stomped some more things. And, I mean, you guys must have seen it was plastered all over the internet. There was this almost controversy that the male lead and the female lead didn't get it on.
Well, good.
One of the most significant parts I found of the film is they look at each other and you think they're going to kiss and you're expecting it and they just kind of give each other a big like hug like fuck me, well done, you fucking rock. And that's that. Sorry, I don't know if I'm supposed to be swearing. I just got really passionate for a second.
Cool. Yes, you fucking can.
I just got really passionate there for a second. But I loved it because you're like, oh, God, here it is. Here's the love scene I've been sat waiting for the whole time. And then nothing.
Does this mean the film passes the Bechdel test?
The what?
The Bechdel test.
Yeah. It's basically, from memory, it's any film that has two main female characters.
I don't know if it's a suit.
Basically two female characters that have a conversation independent from the men and not talking about the men.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But also just the general kind of not having main female characters falling head over heels in love.
Yeah, your description of Pacific Rim has made me kind of slightly more interested in seeing.
And you've got a bit where a robot hits an alien with an oil tanker. I've seen that in a clip.
Yes. Physics doesn't count for that bit, I suppose. My favourite part is the clip where they robot pulls its hand back and it's like activating elbow rockets and you get this rocket powered uppercut. It's like, oh, just yes.
Now we all want one of them occasionally.
It's fantastic. It's like,
are we saying that what's the Stargate reboot needs is giant robots?
Giant robots. It needs no love. It needs giant robot rocket uppercuts
actually funnily enough we were talking about TV series recently that actually spanned multiple galaxies and Stargate was actually one of them.
Yes.
Along with Andromeda, whereas like other series like Star Trek obviously that's, you know, just like within the same Milky Way.
I was going to say, there was one little other nugget of information that Emmerich let slip whilst talking about his desire to try and bring Stargate back, and that was that the original cast would not be coming back because they're all too old.
Ouch. Is this going to be like a reboot where it's like all the characters now young again?
It could very well be that kind of wording going on.
I mean, to be fair, I could understand
Genius
it.
Stargate.
With, I could understand it.
With
no.
I need a catchy jingle.
Yeah, they all skateboard through a half pipe, and then they've
got colourful neon hats on backwards. Mm.
Yeah, and they're all radical dudes.
Yeah, it's got an upbeat intro like Teen Stargate, and I love it. Let's do that.
I can see it, and yet I really don't want to.
I mean, let's do that. Let's make that happen. I'll get the Kickstarter up. Somebody will pay for this.
I mean, I can understand.
I'm sure someone would.
I can understand, you know, recasting in something like Star Trek because it was that long ago. That, you know, half the actors are dead, the other half are, you know, overweight or, you know, they really are too old.
Oh, God, much as I Stargate liked a lot of the original Stargate.
No, go on.
I was just saying Fat Stargate would be even better than Teen Stargate.
Fat Stargate?
Yeah.
Lots of puffing.
Yeah.
I'm gonna...
They're up a flight of stairs. Oh, no!
I'm gonna take us forward to... a far more controversial subject for tonight's...
What's that done, Team Stargate?
Yeah, the Team Stargate. how do I start this? DC have been making my brain hurt this past week.
They've been doing very well at that for the last few months.
I know, but this past week it just seems to have intensified to kind of like, what the hell? I was thinking of back reading Justice League Dark and the new Constantine and then reading Trinity War. I don't think I'm going to do that so much because I'm feeling a bit anti-DC right now.
I think somebody needs to make a, DC, why you hate women so much?
I think DC have been making that.
So this combination of news announcements is there's like three parts to it that's slowly stacked to what the fuck. First off, J.H. Williams III and Hayden Blackman resigned from writing the Batwoman comics last week, publicly announcing this because due to 11th hour editorial changes by DC regarding a Batwoman comic that would have been coming out in December this year. This comic under them originally would have seen Batwoman and Maggie finally getting married,
and this had been planned in advance quite
this yeah bit. This yeah this is the, people knew it, this is where the plot arc was kind of heading, and then DC let die. They've said, no, we can't do that. No, and when I say DC, really I mean people like Dan Dio and all that lot. And Williams and Blackman were just kind of like, what the frill? You know, we've been, you know, fuck it, we're leaving. So there was that, which was kind of bad. And there wasn't any reply, like, during last week by DC about this. Then to add on top of that, there was the announcement by DC of a art talent search sort of competition. And we've written about this on Hex. Paul did a lovely little piece about it, and we'll link to that.
Runty thing.
And basically, DC launched this talent hunt, and it's like, oh, draw these four panels of Harley Quinn in various poses and shizzle, and considering how she's going to commit suicide. Oh, and in the fourth panel, she's naked in a bathtub, surrounded by lots of electrical implements that she's going to plunge into the water to electrocute herself. And it was like, but in all the other panels, you know, the three prior to this fourth and final panel, she could have been dressed. There was no description about her state of clothing. But in the fourth panel, she had to be naked whilst trying to kill herself. And that was just kind of like, what the hell, guys? What the, you know, it's Harley. She gets overly sexualized a lot, considering her origins, which weren't actually that sexual. These days she gets overly sexualized a great deal. Either she's too naked or she's got quite the bosom going on. And
I have to say, I'm only familiar with Harley from, say, the early Batman animated series the Arkham games.
That's where, Batman, the animated series where she originally appeared.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
I know nothing.
And then she got added to the comics, and that was, and she's a Dan Dia creation party as well, which is kind of weird. And then to add to this kind of cycle of events, finally emerged over the weekend from DC, or Dan Dia, why the marriage between Maggie and Batwoman can happen. And it is perhaps the most half-assed reasoning for not carrying out a piece of plot that I've ever bloody well heard. It is ridiculous. And he said to the Beat, heroes shouldn't have happy personal lives. They are committed to being that person and committed to defending others at the sacrifice of their own personal interests. That's very important and something we reinforce. People in the Bat family, their personal lives basically suck. Dick Grayson, blah blah, Bruce Wayne, Tim Drake, Barbara Gordon and Kathy Kane. It's wonderful that they try to establish personal lives, but it's equally important that they set them aside. That is our mandate, that is our edict, and that is our stand. And
that is bollocks.
Yeah, it's like the biggest... It's like, well, no, you let Batman recently have a personal life during the Kevin Smith run that's been taking place outside of the New 52 environment, but you know, he's had a personal life. Okay, it might not have gone to plan. I'm not saying any more on that in case you haven't read that yet. And then it's just the idea of, oh, superheroes... Well, no, but Superman's been married previously. And, you know, okay, all that crap got reset because of the damn New 52. New 52's kind of reset loads of crap, basically. And people's marriages being one of the main things. But then this whole idea of, well, they can't get married. Is it too? Well, no, because heroes have to have something to live for. That generally most heroes aren't actually out for it if it's not going to make them happy doing what they do. That the superheroes need to feel happy at the end of the day doing what they do. And by happy, this could mean obviously an enjoyment of getting revenge or putting criminals behind bars. At the same time, that act might not be what makes them happy. What makes them happy might be keeping those they love safe.
Well, I mean,
which means that you could be married.
They have previously been in the past. I mean, there was that famous one where the Green Lantern walks in and sees his girlfriend fridged.
Yeah.
Literally. In order to create a, you know, a motive kind of story arc and whatnot. And, you know, we've had it a number of times where the hero's lost something. And it's like, well, why can't they gain as well?
It's like this edict almost enforces the fact that this, you know, that's going to happen. You know, the fridging.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking, well, no, you should let them get married, and then the inevitable marital breakdown will happen because obviously Batwoman's going to be too committed to doing what she does. Or, controversy, because Maggie works for the friggin' police, perhaps her line of work keeps her from having a relationship once they're married properly with Batwoman. And so you've got that whole breakdown of two people trying to lead very full-time lives outside of their personal space, and the issues that can be, and it's like, well, that's a great source of friggin' antagonism and drama and stuff. You know, why would you not want that in your comics? Why would you not want something that's a natural source of drama and stakes being raised in your comic? And bear in mind, if they actually get married, that means that they're really committed, which means that, okay, so maybe don't fridge her, but if poor Maggie got kidnapped or something happened to Batwoman and Maggie's going apeshit and doing God knows what with the Gotham Police Department and trying to hunt her down or something, breaking all the rules or whatever, trying to get to her, that's like, that's fabulous. Why would you not want the opportunity to create storylines around that? It doesn't have to happen all the time, but it's something you could use to hinge a great turning point in the character's sort of timeline.
Yeah, it's just incredible how they would have a lazy plot point of, the heroes can never have a happy home life.
But they're already engaged!
Shush! we care not for facts.
Oh,
it's just, it's bollocks.
It's it's big, fat, hairy, we've horrible
had,
bollocks.
We've had some kind of Twitter comments about it.
Oh, yeah, I need to find my phone a second. Yeah.
Almost forgot about that.
So, yeah, so Kieran Gillen, the writer, might have weighed in at one point, but I don't think he quite got what we're saying. But, okay, let's find some of the classy ones. Where's some of the classy ones? Let me find it. A guy called Chris Livingston tweeted at me, and Rich Stanton, that must be why The Incredibles was such a dismal failure of a movie.
Yep.
And then Nev's...
And it also goes back to the, oh no, you know, the struggle with masculinity. That's why everyone hates Aliens as a film.
Was it Nev's Coleman also said, I assume Reed Richards and Sue Richards are just awful in DC's eyes. And let us not forget, oh, they've had some problems in their marriage over the years. Is there anything
else? It's just like EastEnders, yeah. Except with pencils.
Exactly. I actually did tweet at DC Comics official Twitter, for which I've had no reply. I said, do your editors just not watch things like EastEnders? Believe me, marriage does not always or rarely equals absolute utter happiness.
I feel really like a huge party pooper after such an incredible and engaged and obviously passionate rant. But
oh God.
Really, the only thing I can think is that at the end of the day, it's their intellectual property. It's not the fans. If they want to piss on it, they can.
But then I think it's the fact that they've gone against the wishes of the writer and artist that were currently, you know, putting things together. That makes it kind of like, well, no, wait a moment. That's actually, in a way, worse. Like, ignoring fans, that's been standard fare for years, but actually shifting literally at the 11th hour in terms of when writing and production is going on, to say, oh, no, we can't do this now.
Yeah, if they'd said, you know, a while back that, you know, no, we can't do this unless, you know, under extreme circumstances that you've got something that you really want to do with it and it had been an established rule, then okay. It would have been stupid, but they would have had a point. But this just seems to have been, at the very last moment, we've decided, that storyline you've been doing, nah, we don't want it.
I mean, it was also tied in somewhere along the lines, apparently, with giving Killer Croc an origin story, which has also been pulled, which is kind of like, okay. I wasn't so worried about that. And I'm not even worried about the fact that it's a gay marriage that would have been taking place. Even like from the kind of like the rights perspective and all that, it's just the fact that they're kind of denying the dramatic potential. Like, as somebody who's been trying to write for a while, it's just like you're burning your stakes and then you're putting them in the bin. If anyone gets the raising of the stakes,
right?
Reference there, it's just kind of like why would you do that? Why would you get rid of that potential? That's not good writing. You idiots.
I don't think they know good writing.
It could be the case right now.
I mean, in terms of, kind of the argument of they can do what they like with it because it's theirs. Yes, financially, and yes, you know, intellectual rights kind of wise, but by the same token, people still copy films. And piracy still happens. So that proves that, you know, people still have... Well, they don't necessarily see, you know, this company's right to, you know, do something as kind of absolute.
At the same time, though, I also want to bring in a bit of Barthes here just because I can. Go that the reader is the author. The author's dead. Let's go with that a bit. So that the argument that it's completely the creative work of whoever's producing it is never completely correct these days because of how widely read people are. They bring things to each text they interact with.
I think that's going a bit too academic.
I know.
For the argument, to be honest.
But at the same time, it's just kind of like you influence it anyway in your interpretation, which... But yeah, I just, from a writer's perspective, I'm just like, you don't get rid of that kind of gold. Why would you do that? You're crazy.
I mean, if it wasn't for the fact that DC owns the rights to the characters and whatnot, I'd be massively in support of, you know, the writers actually just going off, finding themselves an artist and completing the story up by themselves.
But then you see, this is the thing with the fact that DC and Marvel are so not creator comics led at all, and when previously creator comics have gone near them, oh my god, poor Watchmen and everything they put out.
Yeah.
That was sort of Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons. It's just kind of like, yeah, maybe.
they can't help themselves.
Yeah, the big two aren't very good with creator-owned stuff. I wouldn't like to say what the case is for Imprint. Well, actually, you know, poor Vertigo and what's happened with Constantine and Swamp Thing recently, I think evidence that creator-owned stuff, even on the imprints that you'd think would be kind of more malleable to it, don't do so well. But I think I'm going to take us away from this now, unless anyone's got any final words to scream about DC.
I think it's my final comment.
Can I
just say that, you know, this situation is kind of proving that, you know, we have kind of a balance of mediums being art or whether they're being kind of commercial properties. And, you know, kind of films have gone through this where, you know, some are just literally just for commercial gain. Some are, you know, more artistic and, you know, expressive about the author and whatnot. And, you know, same deal with games. You know, there's been this argument with this. And that I don't feel like there's been that much of a discussion about that with comics. But this is actually making me feel like comics are far more commercial properties than artistic.
But then it comes down to the issue of whether or not you're looking at the indies or you're looking at the mainstream.
Yeah, but I mean, even the mainstream ones, you do get some, you know, art, you know, led ones. And, you know, I'm beginning to kind of feel that comics is just another, you know, industry rather than, you know, kind of basis for art.
I was just thinking the stupid thing about this is because comics have been, you know, slowly being strangled because of, games, you know, everything like that, all the other entertainment industries sort of, you know, muscling in on people's free time. They should be using the comics as a far more experimental playground just to test things out and see if they fly. But they don't seem to be bothered doing that. In fact, they're getting more, no, you can't do this, you can't do that.
To be fair, arguably, I would say that they have been doing that with the amount of characters that they've been killing off and then bringing back.
Yeah, but that's something they've been doing for years.
Yeah, but I mean, that they have kind of experimented with killing off this character or changing this character so that, you know, this happens instead of that. And they have experimented with that. And then they've kind of gone back on themselves and been like, oh, well, you know, it doesn't, you know, the outsides of the comic book, you know, people wouldn't get that.
I think it's the fact that that chopping and changing process has increased in frequency over the past decade, perhaps, would be what one would say. I'm going to move us on to the next final bit of news for the week. I say news. There's a trailer out. Another trailer, but this time for a Hollywood-funded entity. RoboCop 2014 version's first trailer finally dropped. We last talked about RoboCop all the way back in episode 7. Feels so long ago.
I mean, I like the original film, and I've had a lot of reactions to the trailer being like very, oh, this is crap, this is going to be terrible, this is, you know, awful. And it's like, well, to be honest, Total Recall, I can understand that being completely awful because they changed it, they chopped it, and they kind of put together this thing that was kind of it but not, and it was doing it in ways that I didn't like. But I think RoboCop is a much more straightforward one. So, and the fact that they do kind of hark back to the original kind of design in the trailer, and then somebody turns around and says, oh, can you have it in black? I think that was kind of nice detail, you know, kind of harking back to the original. But, I mean, in the end, you know, RoboCop is an action film. I mean, the original one is an action film. It didn't have, I don't think it is necessarily meant to have, you know, kind of all that much to say. Necessarily.
But Paul Verhoeven has got a habit of, you know, with a lot of his films, to have something that's relatively straightforward, but it has far more of an issue.
To be honest, I thought the main underlying theme about Robocop Beyond issues surrounding what it is to be human was, oh my dear lordy, what the hell happens when we try to privatise public services?
Yes, that was a really big one that stuck in my mind from the original.
I thought sometimes when a film like this, everyone else is going, oh my god, that would be awful. And you have people like Cameron and Osborne and sitting at home and they're thinking, that's a really good idea. I bet you could get a lot of money from the contracts on that.
I do wonder now,
but they do have Omnicorp in there, so I'm kind of hoping that they kind of keep that theme in.
I'm wondering if it's still set in Detroit, considering what's actually happened to the real Detroit this year with the whole filing for bankruptcy.
That was quite prophetic.
Yeah, it was just I can't remember, when was the original Robocop meant to be set? Was it meant to be set now? Because that'd be kind of scary.
Possibly. I'm not 100% sure.
In the near future, but I'm not sure if they ever give a date.
No. Yeah. But because I wrote a piece for Hex about my reaction to the trailer, and I gave several warning signs. Several were in the trailer, one wasn't. One of my main warning signs was, where's all the violence? The trailer was rated appropriate for all.
It had explosions.
Well, does it necessarily mean that the film will, if the trailer is?
Rarely, as I pointed out, do films that are potentially quite violent actually sort out having an appropriate for all trailer. If they're going to go for the, well, America be like, what, MA-17 rating, obviously over here 18. The Evil Dead remake that came out last year or earlier this year? The Evil Dead remake that came out recently.
Yeah.
That reveled in having red band trailers, which are trailers that are the really high age rating. They're not really suitable for anyone other than adults. That absolutely reveled in that, and the gore and the violence therein. Whereas what we've got here with this new trailer for this remake is just kind of like, this is kind of, there's not much. There's the hint of explosions, the hint that maybe some form of disfigurement and somebody gets shot. There's that scene where Murphy's partner is down. There's no blood. It's clear the guy's been shot or something. You see no gore at all as he's lying down on the ground in these brief few frames. And it's just like, I think one of the iconic parts of the original Robocop was the violence.
I mean, I have to admit, the fact that Samuel L. Jackson and Gary Oldman is in there is kind of, it's either going to be their worst film ever or it's actually going to be okay. And I'm undecided.
I'm really not happy with what's happened with characters in the film.
No.
The
fact
that, was it Lewis? Is it Lewis?
It's you.
Lewis, who was a woman previously, is now a black man.
And it's
like, okay, it's great, but you've already got a couple of, strong male black characters in there, and the main female character by the looks of things is Murphy's wife, who's going to have more presence in this film, and it's looking incredibly like she's turned kind of damsel.
And by what I gathered from the trailer, Murphy doesn't die.
Yeah.
They save him after his car gets blown up. And it's just, so you can save him. And it's like, no, that's not the point of Robocop. The point was, there was a police officer who was killed. He was mutilated in the line of duty. He was dead. You saw him die, holding the head dead. And next thing you know, he's being treated as property and a piece of meat.
Because they changed, it was one of the things made a point of before this happened. They changed one of the bits of legislation about who the police were really the property of once they died. That was like one of the things. It's like they were actually the property of, was it, not necessarily the police, but like Omnicorp or whatever, whoever's like owning the police force in the Detroit area at that point.
And the bit that I remember, one of the great examples of what they think of Murphy is one of the bits where have him where he's he's in the lab. And they're basically just screwing about with him after, installing hardware and, they've reanimated him. where one of the doctors says, "We've managed to save the arm."
Yes.
And he goes, "Why did you save the arm? Lose the arm. Take the arm off." Because it's what's the point of having a real arm when you can have a completely robotic armored one? And of course it's his rediscovery that he's more than a product.
Eats yeah. the eye? Oh no, that's the Transformers.
And from this it just seems to be they try and make out that they own him because they, you know, rebuilt him. And I'm thinking that's more like Universal Soldier or 6 Million Dollar Man, that type of thing, than RoboCop. And it's just I can't help but think it might be wrong. It might be different when I see the film, but I can't help but think that they've completely missed the central idea.
Yeah.
The central drive of the original film.
I mean, I'm just hoping that if they have missed the central drive, that they actually have something to replace it as a drive. If you know.
Yeah, well, I can confidently say it's going to be better than anything else other than the original RoboCop film. It's going to be better than the two sequels and better than the TV series. Mm. If that won't be hard.
I quite like the second one. But third one was just a bit.
Well, with the let's have a crazed psychopath drug addict and put him in a walking tank. I said, I can't see any possible downside to this plan.
All the kid that was
got shot though, so that was a highlight.
I don't think we need to say spoiler at that point, do we? The film's what?
If we're spoiling RoboCop 2. don't say how old it is.
I doubt if anybody's been like, "Oh, I was waiting to watch that."
By the way, Planet of the Apes, it was Earth.
Oh no.
And the Titanic sinks.
Son of a
But Stampy, you were saying before we started recording.
Oh yeah, Transformers.
Yeah, Transformers and RoboCop and also
Team Stargate.
Yeah, Team Stargate. But no, you were saying before we started recording that you'd actually seen the RoboCop trailer. What had been your initial reaction to it?
Besides, fuck yeah, RoboCop. I don't know. It's what you expect. The vision of the future has changed a lot from what it was all the way back then. So I think they've modernized it, and it's kind of regrettable, but at the same time, RoboCop itself is such a fantastic concept as a piece that it deserved to be done with what's widely conceived as, you know, our vision of the future, and you couldn't do that without ripping off RoboCop. And if you're gonna half rip off RoboCop, you just as well go the whole hog and pull on that whole sort of rich backstory as well. Things were changed, things always get changed, and personally I'm not gonna get either disheartened or excited about it until I'm sat there watching it.
I'll see it.
Mm, me too.
And then I'll make up my mind on that, because you know it's like with the Total Recall redo. I saw that and I didn't think it was that bad, actually. I went in it with this is not Total Recall. It is something with the same idea. It is a spin on the same concept.
I'm going to take issue with something you just said, actually. And it kind of goes back to what I was saying before about the whole nostalgia element.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't that bad. I mean, if you took Total Recall, if you called it something else and you watched it, would it have been a good film? Would it have been all right? Well, the difference between
like I said,
all right,
I thought it was all right.
The difference between all right and not bad is logistically nothing. Except if you say something was not bad, you're saying, you know, it's...
I'm sorry, I might be just checking. You keep talking. I'm just checking my copy if we can remember it for you wholesale a second. It's fine. just keep talking.
Me.
Yeah, it's the whole... It's that you're expecting it to be Total Recall, and even though it wasn't, it was not bad, whereas I think if it was... If they'd called it something else or said inspired by, it would have been a good film with changing nothing. I think... I keep going back to this whole nostalgia thing, but I think it flavours everything.
I see what you're saying, but No, not for me. For me personally, it's like, you know, you can have, well, example, Battlestar Galactica.
Mm-hmm.
I watched the original when it was on TV, including Galactica 80, which was fucking awful. But I was very young, and it had space men and blasters and lasers and ships, and that's pretty much all I wanted at the time. So it was ace. And it's like, oh, they're remaking Battlestar Galactica. And Battlestar Galactica completely kicked the ass of the original series.
Mm.
And was fantastic. And until near the end, where it went a bit, what yeah. are you doing?
This is what happens when writers don't get paid properly and have to strike.
Yeah. So, you know, the whole nostalgia thing, yeah. I'm quite happy for something to... you know, completely blowing the original out of the water. I'm not basing, you know, I can be quite happy on something being a drastic departure, but, you know, sort of similar starting place. Because the new Galactica was, you know, kind of, you know, had a similar starting place, but it went in, you know, completely directions, and I was, you know, I was happy with that. It was, it's just, you know, when I first heard about it, it was like, but with all these remakes, I'll watch them, and sometimes I prefer a remake or a reboot or whatever you want to call it to the original. And the other times, they're J.J. Abrams Star Trek.
I'm still waiting for a Philip K. Dick adaptation that is a bit closer to the original than what we've tended to get. Like, I've just to remind myself, I've just quickly scanned through We Can Remember It For You Wholesale just to check whether or not, and it's like the only thing that bears any resemblance to the short story is just him requesting having the process, and that's about it. The whole thing ends on him having his sanity questioned.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't read
it's
it
not
myself.
Very positive.
Yeah, I haven't read it myself, but I have heard about it, like, you know, being quite a departure from, you know,
both films are a complete and utter departure once the memory placing has happened.
I think the problem is that the new Total Recall was a simulacrum, or kind of basically it kind of it was a remake of Total Recall, but it didn't actually do very much with the original source material that the original Total Recall was based on. So it was just If you kind of have a starting point of We Can Remember It For You Wholesale, and then there's the adaptation Total Recall, which is completely different, which is unique, and, you know, that's all well and good. But it's the extension of that the new Total Recall is, and it kind of doesn't really correlate.
The levels of abstraction were noticeable. And not so from remembering the story, it was just kind of... I found it to be quite a confusing and boring film, the remake.
Well, it wasn't even a remake, was it?
No. Reinterpretation.
Mm. Yeah. And there were several points where I was just going, that's just stupid. Mm. Why are you doing that?
And I feel like the stakes were higher in the original Total Recall as well, because, you know, there's this entire planet, you know, that's at stake.
To get your ass to.
Exactly.
There's just one other thing that I want to say, going back to the Robocop trailer, which I'm a bit concerned about in terms of themes that they might be trying to pull through. Because obviously it's cybernetics. Fine, we get that cybernetics are going to be playing a huge part in it. But there's this whole sort of interpretation of what does it mean to be human again being played out.
Mm.
And I am wondering if they've really moved on that much from what they tried to do with the 80s film with that. Obviously he's going to have a lot more of his personality left because he doesn't die.
Yeah.
But it's just kind of like, well, are they going to advance much? Because the ideas of what it means to have cybernetics and be human have advanced quite a bit, because we have actually got better cybernetics now, which
and
people
we,
are actually
we do have,
giving.
You know, like army vets who are, you know, running on robotic legs.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing. So, you know, we do have that kind of thing, you know, starting to happen. A lot slower than young me thought.
Mm. Well, part of the problem is lack of investment in the sciences in general. I think,
you know, because there's a lot of technology done for us.
There's a lot of technologies that, you know, have come out or even stuff that's still in development that has been kind of looked at in sci-fi and been like, yeah, you know, this is possible in, you know, this many years. And science has pretty much turned around and said, actually, it's possible, you know, in like, what, 2 years, 5 years, something like that.
We
just don't have the money to develop it.
We were promised HAL 9000. Instead, we've got bloody Kinect. That's a terrible trade-off.
I think I would have to agree there. Mind you, or we were promised HAL 9000 and we got the voice of Siri.
But do you know what we have got recently, which I literally have, like, just before we started, just That's finished smooth. 3 hours playing with.
Go on.
I've just been playing with the Oculus Rift.
Mm.
And my God, it is everything that it's promised to be. I spent 25 minutes on the back of a 3D dragon doing barrel rolls. And it was just ridiculous. I did a roller coaster simulator and genuinely felt my stomach come up into the back of my throat on a vertical drop, you know?
I think the thing about the Oculus Rift, though, is that it's been done by Kickstarter, and it was basically this one guy that, you know, kind of had an idea and, you know, kind of built up a company around that idea. And it's like, why hasn't existing companies actually come up with this before? Why haven't they decided to stick in larger, screens into, you know, kind of visors so that we can have this before?
I think if you look into it, there's been a lot more done for it than you think. I mean, this guy is an experienced industry professional. He is one of the leading authorities on virtual reality and simulation anyway. And he personally actually has the world's largest collection of virtual reality headsets and software that exists anywhere. The guy's a real passionate. He knows his field. If anyone was going to do it, it was always going to be him. And the fact that the Kickstarter's got behind it, I think, is almost largely irrelevant. It just means that he's able to do it with his own experience in creative direction rather than having to go to a larger company on hands and knees and say, hey, I'm going to need a large pile of money to do something which you guys might like. Whereas you've got the large community who's seen the potential of it, and that's exactly what Kickstarter is all about. Mm. Like, I've just been playing with the SDK version, which is obviously the only one that's around at the minute. And it's incredible. Everything that you've heard about it, every video you've watched and got kind of excited and then thought about it and got more excited, just imagine that level of excitement going into it, maybe with that sort of core, personally with me anyway, that sort of core kernel of expecting, like, disappointment. I've been hyping this up in my head. This isn't anywhere near as cool as it's going to be. I'm like, it wasn't as cool as I thought it was going to be. It was easily, like, 3 to 4 times cooler than that. It is just stunning. I played a horror game called Tower of Dread or Dread Tower or something like that, and it's a procedurally generated maze, basic inventory system. You look down and you're holding a map the whole time, and you open this door and you've just got this misty, dark set of tunnels, and there's no music. There's very little sound, and you've just got this crushing sense of apprehension because it's your entire field of vision, and you are literally, you know, I was turning my head to the side and peering around corners and it was working, and then I turned around another corner and there was a very creepy looking woman looking the other way, and I put the Oculus Rift down and went and had a very cold shower because it was genuinely terrifying. And of course the guys were watching it on the monitor and they were like, oh, it wasn't that bad. I'm like, all right, you try it. And of course in the Rift it was probably about half as light as it is on the monitor, and he lasted about 45 seconds because he turned around the first corner and there was something there, and he was just like, no, it's just too immersive and too real.
I'm glad you like the idea.
Oh, just the idea. I liked the idea. The practicality of it is so much more than you can describe without having your hands on.
I can imagine, because I mean, if you think of it not just being used for kind of video games, but you know, all sorts of stuff,
yeah,
you know, is kind of applicable with this. And it's kind of what my gripe is, the fact that we Nintendo tried to release Virtual Boy in the 80s,
yeah, I was playing, and it's taken this long
to actually get you know, anywhere near a decent, like, you know, headset.
To be fair, the Virtual Boy was just stereoscopic 3D.
Yeah.
With sprites.
This conversation is so easy to divert into the logarithmic scale of technological advancement since then.
Hmm.
Look at what we've achieved in 10 years, and then in the 10 years before that, and then in the 10 years before that. And it was always going to happen, and it's just going to keep accelerating.
I'm just not convinced. And I think it will probably be as big a success as 3D TV.
To be fair,
next time I have it over, you come over. You come over and you play it.
I've tried much earlier VRs and not been impressed.
To be fair, though, I mean, a lot of the technologies that
I'm ready to be impressed. I like the idea, but the treadmill, that whole treadmill idea. You know,
the Virtuix Omni.
Yeah, it's like, you want me to walk around in the treadmill while wearing a helmet? Fuck off.
It just looks so cool.
I think a lot of the technologies that have come around in gaming over the recent years, part of the problem is that, you know, you kind of watch the video on, say, for example, YouTube or something like that, and it really doesn't give the full effect. You know, it's kind of why, say, for example, I think E3, when they first announced the 3DS... And it's like, you know, people at the show was like, oh, this is amazing. But, you know, obviously we can't show, you know, people on YouTube because they won't actually get the full effect of it. And I think it's a similar type of thing. It's an experiential, you know, kind of thing
I've got a 3DS and it's just, yeah.
Yeah, now it is. Every technology that you get that seems so, you know, amazing at first, you know, it becomes normalized.
It's like at the last Eurogamer Expo, I was playing Doom 3 BFG Edition with, you know, 3D glasses and in like a 6-point sound headset on. And my overriding thought was, I look like a tit. This kind of works as it's, you know, a bit more aversive, but I look like just a massive...
You know, I don't care for looking. Like you said about it being an experience, we ran a demo called... Titans of the Stars or something. And it's really simple. You're sat in a really little cockpit and you have one button, which is the space bar, and it just whisks you around the solar system. And you start off orbiting Earth and I think you can press control and it'll give you a little screen with some facts about it. It's an educational program, basically. And then you get whisked around, and as you're going and going and going, this sense of scale. I mean, we've all seen the Flash animation where you can roll your mouse wheel and it like scales everything from like a microbial scale right up to the Rigel star.
Yeah, and there's been films like that kind of thing as well.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
It starts off with a 1 meter square picnic blanket.
Yeah, and then it zooms out logarithmically, and then all of a sudden you try and get this sense of scale. And I didn't feel it until I was sat next to our star looking at what's that ridiculously enormous red star that's the largest one on record. I had its name on the screen like an hour and a half ago, I can't remember, but I was just sat there, and like when it finished, I mean, it did it all in scale, and then it zoomed up to like a top-down view of the solar system and said, here's how it should be, here's it with this star, here's it with Rigel the blue star, and here's it with like the red star, and it finished, and I just took the headset on. I just sat there for 5 minutes, just like completely awed by this sense of scale. Is this thing expanded on my view and just took up more and more of the view? And I'm like leaning back in my chair, just...
You see, stuff like that, I can see it working brilliantly for things like that.
The sense of scale was incredible. And the sense of motion, like I mentioned the roller coaster model. We go around it and it you know, it whipped you up on a 90-degree angle going along a wall section, and my stomach just went up into my throat, and it was like there was a genuine sensation of motion. And this wasn't even headset. This was just like a pair of computer speakers and an Oculus Rift like low-res SDK. I mean, if you got a really nice set of headphones, if you got a useless thing on your face, because I was surprised how light it was, actually. It's very uninvasive. You know, the moment you get it configured to your face, the moment you get it comfortable on the straps, if you got a really nice sound system or, you know, a really good headset, I genuinely just think it would... My experience was incredible, and I would imagine it's quite the low end of what you could experience on it.
Yeah,
if you set it up better, yeah, it would be incredible. Incredible.
I just think what I read is correct. The machine that you got is obviously not the retail one.
No.
And the retail one is actually, I think it's meant to have full 1080p.
Yes,
it's much higher resolution, the production
one. Yeah. Whereas the one that you did, was it the 800 by 600 or something like that?
It's about that. If you manage to tear yourself away from it, it's very you can see the pixels, basically. Yeah. And, you know, you're getting this experience on what we would consider an incredibly low-def resolution.
Mm.
It can only get better. The integration into existing games wasn't great.
Yeah.
I found Minecraft, which, clever title, I guess. I found that quite... The camera control itself was quite jerky. Yeah. Half-Life 2 was, although, I mean, in some respects it was incredible. The NPCs turned around and spoke to you, and you were genuinely making eye contact with these people. Mm. And that was surprisingly incredible. It really brought an extra dimension to it. And then at the same time, the movement, I think the camera tracking was default. It's too fast, I think someone said. There's a hot fix for it. But incredibly nauseating. I could only play it for about 10 minutes.
Okay, I'm going to move us on to our final part of the show, because, you know, we got Rick here, so he could talk about this amazing bar that he's in the process of putting together in Falmouth here in Cornwall. So I want to ask questions about 8-Bit Gaming Bar. So, questions. I'm hoping you've got some answers, mister.
I do too. Otherwise, it's going to be a really crap interview and I'll lose most of my audience.
Okay, so... I think the question I would like at least a vague answer for, when's the bar opening?
We have some minor bits of paperwork to go through before I can confirm anything. Mm-hmm. But I'd like this to be almost the first place that I say it looks like it's going to be Friday, Saturday, the 11th, 12th October. Which coincidentally is the release date for the new Pokemon games. So it looks like we're going to have a big themed opening event. I'm waiting for a contact back from obviously the Pokemon company.
Got to drink them all.
It's looking about then.
That's
including a little bit of leeway for additional paperwork and nightmares, and that's the most likely aimed for point.
Mm. Where are you hoping to be based in Falmouth at the moment?
We're actually in the old Shades nightclub premises, which is 4 Key Street. If anyone doesn't know it, it's just around the corner from the Quayside pub, just up the road from Trago's. For anyone who is drawing the inevitable conclusion, yes, it's directly opposite the road from the old loading bar.
Okay. I think, obviously, it's a gaming bar, so I think perhaps one of the most important questions we can ask is, what systems are you hoping to have on premises once you're open?
Yes.
And seeing as it's got the 8-bit gaming bar, I'm narrowing my eyes and staring at the screen in expectation.
At the moment, God, we have such a list. I'm waiting for the delivery of an Atari Jaguar, which is going to be like the... Yes, I'm so excited about actually getting
that 64-bit. It's not 64-bit.
That's
64-bit, or so they said.
Yeah.
It wasn't really.
64-ish.
To be true, the
main reasoning behind the name... I'll tell you what, we'll go into the name later. At the moment, I've got one stand-up 80-game arcade cabinet, which I'm really excited about, because it's not like every other 80-game arcade cabinet I've seen. It's not 4 good games and 76 Japanese games you've never heard of. It is actually 80 good, solid games, which I'm really excited about. I've gone through the list and I've gone, this is exactly what I need. I've got PS3s, I've got Xbox 360s, I've got PS2s, PS1s, GameCubes, Nintendo 64s, I've got Nintendo Wiis, I've got Mega Drives, I've got SNESs, and I've got just a stack of, like, original NES systems, Mega Drive 1 and 2s. I've got Master Systems. Mm. There are so many people saying, oh, I want you to have this. I want you to have this. They're all going to be playable. Anything that's not playable, I mean, I'm probably going to set up a big display for all the old Commodores and Jaguars and everything have been offered. You know, just get a nice big glass case and just display the timeline of gaming. That's something I would genuinely love to do.
I'm approving.
That's good.
I'm nodding in approval.
I think
remember where you came from.
And before we forget to ask, since you said to do this after, the name. What's the deal with the name?
The name, the truth behind the name is we were really struggling to find a name, and I got drunk and suggested it, and everyone went, oh, I really like that, actually. And the more we thought about it, the better it was, because you say 8-bit, and it rolls off the tongue. 16-bit, 32-bit, 64-bit, 128-bit. Yeah. All right, they don't roll off the tongue, and everything comes back to 8. It's the whole hexadecimal language of programming. Everything comes back to 8 bits. Everything started there, and everything falls back there eventually. And that's what I really wanted to emphasize. Yes, it's retro, but you don't get modern without retro. And in fact, the tagline for the entire bar is "Classic never gets old."
Mm. I like that.
And so I do have gay bar playing through my head now.
Yeah.
I'm gonna take you to a gaming bar.
Yeah, don't worry. I've had that just about once a week for the 4 or so months I've been working on this. Usually from myself.
Ah, right.
Are there any gaming themed cocktails that you've actually been working on? You don't have to tell us the actual ingredients, but any sort of vague themes.
I think I've got
themes.
9 so far.
Okay.
Have you tasted them yet?
Yes, extensively. In fact, we've been sampling them tonight while playing the Oculus. It was kind of my payment for my friend bringing the Oculus over. It's I'll show you some of the cocktails we've got. I've been quite cagey with naming them,
okay,
because obviously I don't want to be stung out of the left wing with a lawsuit. So they're all implied names, but they're quite easy to guess where they come from. I mean, the flagship drink everyone seems to enjoy the most is the Smashed Bandicoot. And then we've got, you know, you've got the Plumber's Companion, you've got the King of the Castle, which is obviously it's a compliment to the Plumber's Companion. We've got All Out of Gum, which is just a really sort of tough cocktail that doesn't really take any prisoners. It kicks a lot of ass. It's All Out of Gum, so all there is left to do is to let it kick you around the bar a couple of times.
Can I just ask, if this bar, you know, because it sounds really awesome and it's obviously going to get a lot of people. I mean, there's a lot of buzz around the local area about it already.
I know. I love that. I love that, yeah. People are talking about it.
if this one is a, you know, great success and, you know, you do make a lot of profit, would you consider franchising it to other places in the country?
Like in the north?
I don't know, actually. I like the idea. I'm not sure if I would get really precious over the bar,
okay.
Which is actually funny. That's kind of actually how the bar started, because the loading bar moved up to London a good few months ago now. And I actually approached him about opening it in the old premises,
yeah,
and sort of franchising the loading bar off there, because it was my favorite drinking hole and it was virtually everyone I know's favorite drinking hole. And it seemed a shame to let it go.
Yeah.
And I chatted to him for a while, and I actually got like 2/3 of the way through a serious business plan, and then we sort of just went, you know, I don't think franchising is going to work. He's very precious about his business, and then after a couple of days I thought, you know, I've put all this legwork in, and I actually chatted to Jimmy about it. The last thing I want is anyone thinking there's any bad blood between me and Jimmy or I'm ripping off his ideas or anything, but he was one of the first people I spoke to about going independent and doing it for myself, and he was just incredibly supportive about it. He's like, you know, I genuinely love that somebody's doing it down there again, because it's not an exclusive concept. I mean, it's picking up momentum all across the world.
People want to get together, play games and drink drinks.
I can't think of a more social hobby.
I've been wanting to do it for years.
Exactly.
And it's really annoying. I am poor and have no money.
I mean, I feel sorry for Cookie because he's down here on holiday at the moment in Cornwall. And, you know, he's kind of coming at a time where loading is gone and 8-bit hasn't started yet. So I kind of feel sorry for Cookie a little bit.
Well, looks like everyone's just going to have to come back down again.
Yeah.
Maybe
we'll do a kind of live all-together nerd assembly.
I got one personal question to ask about the cocktails. Because I have ingredients issues, or namely, if lemonade's involved.
Yeah.
How many are you planning to mix with lemonade?
What kind of lemonade would be the best? Because obviously when we went to loading, Jimmy used to actually use Sprite, which is absolutely fine for that deadly ingredient to Emily, called aspartame.
Aspartame's my kryptonite.
It's not because of kind of, it's basically because she's allergic to it rather than, you know, kind of worried about, kind of brain lesions and all the other stuff that you've kind of heard in, kind of Wikipedia and whatnot.
I'd actually usually lemonade.
Okay.
Do you use orange? Because that is my kryptonite.
Really?
There are a couple of things with orange.
I get absolutely blinding migraines if I have orange juice.
I'd stick away from the Castle King then, because that's... Right. It's basically, it's a fiery tequila sunrise-y style thing.
See, now if it was yellow, I would actually accuse Retroid of being a Green Lantern.
I mean... my Smashed Bandicoot runs on mango juice, which is...
mango juice is absolutely fine and really nice.
Yeah.
See, I like the fact that you've been put... Because a lot of places when they do cocktails, most of them I can't go in there because they're just lemonade-based. Like, it's...
Really?
A lot of places, yeah. It's like cocktails, it's like, lemonade-based ingredient. Yeah, and then there's alcohol.
You're kidding? And most of mine are fruit juices, actually.
Yeah, well, then you're fantastic and fabulous already. And I
which isn't really helping the whole game bar thing, is it? it's awfully fruity at the game bar.
Drinks
you would be amazed as well how many things like smoothies have orange juice in them, so I can't have them. Oh, it's like you walk into a supermarket and it's like, ooh, banana and strawberry smoothie. That sounds really nice. What's the third ingredient? Orange juice.
Mm.
Bastard innocent drinks. You're not innocent to me.
Okay. I think we've got one last question that we definitely want to ask because, yeah, as we've kind of already pointed out, that the gaming bar movement's gaining momentum. Is there anything you're trying to do to be a bit different as a gaming bar with 8-bit?
I like to think I'm branching out a lot more than a lot of gaming bars because gaming as itself is such a huge hobby. I mean, I'm going to be running a weekly tournament. I'm going to be running a daytime tournament, which is already gaining sponsorship, which is great. I've just actually had an email back from Codemasters saying, hey, we'd love to give you a load of free stuff for doing a racing game of ours. What's your address? Which was really nice. They're the first company to really turn around and give me free stuff. But as sort of the competitive non-profit side of things, more organized, really. It's not just going to be a bunch of guys turning up. I'm going to have a league table. I'm going to have everything. I'm going to have a huge stack of card games, board games. I've got the whole downstairs of the old nightclub, which is going to be hireable for tabletop wargaming, D&D sessions. In fact, I have a huge stack of 3 and 3.5 edition rule books, which are going to be available for the D&D sessions run down there. And I backed a Kickstarter for Dwarven Forge for some incredible dungeon scenery. And again, that's all just going to be, that's going to be down there. If you want to hire downstairs for your D&D group, you'll have full access to all the drinks. You'll have all my resource books. You'll have dungeon scenery there for you. So if you guys want to turn up and have a game of Risk instead of a game of Streets of Rage, I mean, it's all going to be there.
Okay, can I just interject one last question?
Of course.
Because, I mean, obviously, I'm you know, as big a geek as anybody here, presumably.
That's why we're here.
Yeah. And this stuff sounds really, really exciting, you know, being the geek that I am. What are you going to do to try and kind of even that out to kind of, you know, kind of get in non-geeky people?
I like to call them the people with the capacity to geek. I think that line from Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah.
works very well. Do they have the latent capacity geeks. To be... Yeah, latent geeks.
They just need to be drawn out.
Yeah, so somebody that isn't necessarily, you know, into, you know, all of the consoles ever, you know, made since the NES or whatever, but somebody that, you know, is, I don't know, plays a couple of Facebook games every now and again, and, you know, have you got anything for kind of the non...
Anything to queue with them.
Yeah.
Well, we're planning on having a couple of mid-range laptops in daytime use for sort of an internet cafe thing, because there's not really anything like that around anymore. So we're going to have a little bit of an internet cafe thing, which we'll bring in a few of the sort of less casual, less hardcore gaming types. I think the wide range of games available is going to really make it interesting to people. I mean, personally, I can't abide football games, but they've got such a huge following that in itself is a huge market, which is just going to be inviting itself in. If I run a monthly football game tournament, all right, I'll be dozing behind the bar, but you'll have 15, 20 people sat in the corner cheering it on. And that's a group that I wouldn't normally consider them to be, you know, real hardcore gamers. And again, it's just marketing it. If you've got friends going down saying, it's a really great place, he makes fantastic cocktails. I mean, I didn't really want to get this out there, but I'm actually looking at taking like proper flair bartending courses. Cool. The whole thing itself should be a spectacle. Cool. So I'm going to be...
That could be something.
Exactly.
You'll have to dress up while you're bartending there.
Well, I'm already pretty good at making these cocktails. I've got a lot of practice.
But if you don like a Sonic suit or something.
Oh, that's just no. You're a Sonic suit. That's a bit mean.
No, I get a suit for that. Yeah, I'm more likely to dress as Peach, to be honest. Well, I didn't say that.
What you do is you hire a you know, kind of somebody that's done it for years and dress him in Master Chief's outfit.
Yeah.
Nobody.
Yeah, exactly.
I can see that.
And you can just go on holiday to wherever. And
just like... Yeah, just go and have a nap on my huge pile of money that people would just be throwing at me.
Go on. I'll shut up.
I was just going to say, I want to sell the bar as a whole. I don't want to sell the gaming. I don't want to sell the drinks. I want people to say, this is a really nice, it's vibrant place to go. This guy behind the bar, he makes these amazing cocktails. You know, it's a bit of a show. It's the fact that people don't make cocktails anymore. People go, there's a glass, there's some orange juice, there's some alcohol, there's some ice, crack on, that's £4. You know, I've got proper Boston glass shakers. I've got, I got a proper ice machine. It's, you know, the whole thing. If somebody orders a drink, I don't want the guy next to him going, God, why is it taking so long? I want the guy stood next to them waiting going, look at how he's making that drink. It's a proper mixed cocktail drink. It looks fantastic. I want him to have that much care and attention to what I'm drinking.
That's the kind of difference between
I want to sell, you know, that
when's my drink coming along and he's making mine next. I'm watching
this. Shit, look at that, yeah.
I think I'm going to have to say, sadly, that this is all we've got time for this week. And it's goodbye from...
Richard at the 8-Bit Gaming Bar. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/8BitFalmouth, or one word. We're also on Twitter at 8bit_Falmouth. Sorry for the confusion.
Right, and it's good night from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
It's good night. Blah, blah, blah. It's good night from me, Paul Blur. Have Twitter, Paul Blur.
Okay.
I'm fine without the...
Cool. And it's good night from me, Emily King. You can find me on Twitter at EK6891. You can also have a look at any of the crazy creative stuff I tend to be working on at drowningandmultimedia.co.uk. You can find Nerds Assemble over at www.nerdsassemble.co.uk. You can also find us on iTunes. You can also find us on Twitter at Nerds Podcast, plus we're on Facebook and Google Plus as Nerds Assemble Podcast. Also, don't forget to check out our sister site, The Hex Dimension, and we are still looking for additional content creators, and I want to apologise if you've tried contacting the site recently about doing content for us. We've had problems with the form that we had. If you have tried contacting us, you can try emailing us at the address that we've got there now, or you know, you could just try contacting us through social media. We will get the message now, and I'm sorry if you have tried contacting us, but anyway,
yeah, we'd like to hear from you.
Yeah. Anyway, good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.